Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Talking T20, ESPN Cricket Info's podcast on the format that is reshaping cricket and redrawing its boundaries. Our conversation today is about the world number one ranked T20 international side, Pakistan, in the company of two people who were not so long ago key members of the popular YouTube show Pacers Pacer. Usman Samiuddin, senior editor ESPN Cricket Info, a man with over a million words and counting on Pakistan cricket, it's fair to say. Welcome to the show, Usman.
Hi, thanks guys. A million words is a milestone I'm very proud of. Thank you.
Also with us today is one of our regulars on the site who now manages the Pakistan Super League's most successful franchise, Islamabad United. Hasan Cheema, great to have you with us as well.
My pleasure. Although I'd like to correct you on the thing regarding Paper Space being a popular YouTube show. I think that's a bit generous.
Just a relative definition among all of us cricket fans who did enjoy it, so we'll hold on to that. And so as we speak, Pakistan are 12 points clear of any other side on the ICC T20 rankings, and they look set to hold on to the number one spot for a while now. Here's the deal. India, the number two side, will only narrow down the gap to 7 points if they win all their fixtures until the end of their New Zealand tour in February. We don't go into such depth while analyzing T20 international rankings, Usman, but considering how haphazard the format is at the international level. But this is a bit of a unique case of sustained domination, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm struggling to think back to other times. I think, you know, in that earliest period of international T20s, I think Pakistan were doing pretty well as well. But like to look at where they've gone from, you know, we saw them at the 2016 World T20 in India, and they were just like an awful team under RCB. They just looked like a nothing side going nowhere, and, you know, like completely unaware of like what was required in the format. And the changes since have been, it's been such a huge turnaround. And I think, like, you know, some of the domination, I think, I don't want to downplay any of it, but, you know, the bilateral T20 format is still, I don't know, sometimes it doesn't feel like the most intense or most consequential format of international cricket, like bilateral. I think, you know, T20s is most exciting. I think it's at pretty fair to say T20s are most exciting either at the World T20 or in the domestic T20 leagues like the IPL and the PSL and the CPL and stuff. So bilateral T20s, they get overlooked a little bit. Plus, also, I think they've had a run where they've played a few, not all of them, but a few like pretty weak teams, I would say. Like, I know the West Indies were two-time world champs, but I don't think they've been at their best outside of World T20s. They had a really weak Sri Lanka team as well that they played against. But, you know, you counterside that by looking at their results in New Zealand. New Zealand are always competitive. They won a series there.
World number one when Pakistan went there.
Yeah. And they beat them, you know, I think two games out of three, they were fairly comfortable winners in the UAE just now. They played a lot of them in the UAE as well. But I think you're right. In this format, to get the kind of consistency that they have, it's been a pretty phenomenal achievement. I don't think there's any real downplaying of that. You could qualify it a little bit, which I've tried to do, but I don't think you can downplay it to that huge an extent.
Yeah. Hasan, a couple of questions for you. Firstly, a much simpler one. Do you actually remember the last time Pakistan lost a T20 series?
I think the last time Pakistan were a bad T20 team was the 2016 World T20 that Usman was referring to, but I don't remember the last time they lost a bilateral series.
Yeah, I did dig through some of those stats. It seems to be when they toured New Zealand in 2015.
Yeah, absolutely.
2015-16, the New Zealand home season, that's quite some way back. Secondly, my question is a bit of a counter to what Usman said. Essentially, this is, I think, the longest period without a World T20 since World T20s began, and that's not really Pakistan's fault, is it?
Yeah. I mean, such is Pakistan's luck that when they did win the World T20 title, it was literally the shortest reign any world title winner has ever had, which was, I think, 10 months or something. And now that after like 5-6 years of being a below average team, they're again a quality T20 side, and there's no World T20 for at least another 2 years.
Yeah, it's about 4 years, or at least we're about 16, 17 months to the next World T20 in Australia, which is in 2020, which is in early 2020. What makes this all the more incredible, this is again a question to both of you, we'll start with Usman, is the fact that till about 2015, Pakistan was seen as a side whose limited overs game seemed stuck in the 90s. We used to keep talking about how their run rates are slow, how they seem to be playing the whole Sharjah in the 90s brand of cricket in ODIs, and that kind of seemed to rub off in T20s. Would it be just too simplistic to credit just the PSL for all of this, Usman?
Yeah, I mean, potentially, yeah. It is too, you know, PSL, I don't think we can downplay the effect that it's had a massive effect, there's no doubt, in bringing players like, you know, first of all, I think in bringing players like Faf Zaman and Shadab Khan and Hassan Ali, you know, we know all these names are familiar names now, but bringing them first to the fore and then putting them in an environment where they are working with essentially a non-Pakistani infrastructure. I think that's been important, that they've been working in the PSL with, you know, foreign coaches, with international standards, with other players who they're learning a lot from. I think, you know, Hassan will have a few excellent stories of how these guys have developed with, you know, playing alongside the likes of, I don't know, at Islamabad United, you have Brad Haddon, you had Shane Watson.
Yeah, it's like the McCullum and Pollard as well, those sorts of guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, these guys, 5 years ago, they would not have had any opportunity to do that. You know, they were frozen out of the IPL. They would have had nothing like that. I think the other, another difference maybe is that I think in Mickey Arthur, they found a coach who maybe thinks a little bit more about these two formats than we've had in the past. I think he was at least more aware because he's had his own experiences as a T20 coach in a number of leagues around the world. So they've had that happy kind of coincidence, you know, of talent coming through, of a platform for that talent to shine in, and then to have somebody like Mickey Arthur who can kind of understand, who has experiences from around the world as a coach, and you know can kind of bring that through as well. It hasn't, which I'm sure we'll discuss this, but it hasn't much helped their ODI side right now, or it's not helping it currently. But, you know, the T20 side, it's definitely like it's turned around completely. And I think Hassan, in fact, in an article he wrote, I think just a few days ago, made a really good point about how you build like your T20 side. You know, there's two models. One, you go the West Indies way, or you go the CSK, CSK way, where you have like, you know, explosive power hitters down the line, or you go something like the Hyderabad Sunrisers, where, you know, you basically depend on your bowling. And I think Pakistan have such depth in their bowling right now that it kind of makes, you know, if you look at their totals in the UAE, 140 to 160, generally, they can try as hard as they want, but they're going to end up somewhere between that range. But generally, their bowling is so strong that they're good enough to kind of, you know, defend that ultimately.
Hassan, just an extension of what Usman just said, it's not just the bowling, isn't it? A lot of these guys can do all-round roles. It's not like they're weaker with the bat. You're talking Shadab, you're talking of Fahim Ashraf, there's so many other names. There is a significant increase in the wealth of all-round skills that have come to the fore from the PSL into Pakistan cricket. Is that a big change that you've seen in the last few years that's kind of impacted the international side?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little hesitant to talk about that because, as you mentioned earlier, my own role within the league. But I think I've been following Pakistan domestic cricket for a decade, and a lot of what the PSL has done is basically what the problems in the domestic game are. It sort of tries to paper over them, essentially. So one of the problems that you have is that you've got 18 first-class teams who play the 40 and the 50-over tournaments. So you don't really know the quality of players playing against each other because the quality is so diluted. In the PSL, if you've got 5 or 6 teams and they've got like 4 foreign players in them, that essentially means that every guy that you're going to bowl to or every guy that you're facing is of a certain quality. So that means you can see who's actually good against quality opponents. The other thing that the PSL helps is helping the coach and the selected regarding the temperament of these guys, because if you are playing a Kajazan Trophy game over here, I mean, I was doing commentary in the Kajazan Cup final recently, and there were like about maybe 1,000 people in the ground at best. Whereas in the PSL, if you are in the PSL final, if you are in a Friday game in Sharjah, then you are playing against international players in front of like a huge TV audience and like a packed crowd, So then we can see who is actually going to step up and who doesn't have the temperament. Prior to this, what Pakistan would do was whoever performed well in the domestic cricket, they would induct him into the national team.
Yeah.
And that is where you would see whether he had the temperament to succeed there or not. Mm. So I think that, apart from the stuff that Usman talked about, has been the key in sort of like helping Pakistan identify which are the guys they want to retain and develop.
Yeah, we'll just stay on the PSL theme for a while. It's a conversation we hear in cricketing circles from time to time over the past couple of years. Is it true that a lot of these guys, I'm talking the same names again, as Fakhar Zaman or Shadab Khan or Fahim Ashraf or Hasan Ali, is it true that without the PSL, these talents wouldn't have come to the forefront as well as they have, thanks to various reasons that you mentioned, or at least not as quickly as they have come to prominence?
I'm sure that they wouldn't have come up as quickly as that. Because if you look at somebody like Shadab, he joined us when he had played two or three first-class games, and suddenly he was in the dressing room, he was in the Mets, getting taught by Samuel Battery how to bowl in T20 cricket. He was in the dressing room discussing which side, which end of the pitch at Dubai feels more with Syed Ajmal and Misbah-ul Haq.
Yeah.
So that is not something that he would have had like before this, right?
Yeah.
So that sort of changes how quickly a guy develops. You can see if someone is like, in his case, someone is like a sponge, he just wants to gather as much information as possible and ask everyone around him, whether that's somebody like a Watson or Graham Smith or all of these part-time guys, then you can see him develop a little more quickly. Prior to that, if he was playing for, he would have played like a season or two for his regional team, maybe play with like one or two international team players, then he would have gone to a department. So his whole development would have been much slower. So I think that's been obviously one of the reasons. But I think for a few of these guys, like somebody like a Sharab,
yeah,
I'm sure he would have come through to the national team by the time, let's say, he was 23, 24. Whether he would have been as good, I don't know. But somebody like Asif Ali or somebody like, especially like a Fakhar Zaman, I don't think Fakhar Zaman, I remember commentating during the 2015 domestic T20s here, and Fakhar scored 100 in domestic T20 game, and he was like, by that stage, he was already like, you know, a budding big name. But I don't see how Fakhar becomes the player that he is today without having played with Brendan McCullum, and like, you know, the way he plays right now compared to the way he played, say, 2.5 years ago. For someone who's seen both those versions of Fakhar, you can clearly see that there is a McCullumization of the way he bats, especially in the power play.
Usman, I'll just focus on one bit of what Hasan just spoke about, which is the fast-tracking bit, you know, names which have been heard of in the domestic circuit but are not really household names otherwise. People don't know of them who just follow international cricket. This is very similar to what we see in the IPL, and since the IPL over the years, we've kind of felt that there's a bottomless pit of talent for India to choose from, as you know, guys who've come to prominence, they play these high pressure games with the likes of Dhoni and other international guys and the best of T20 talent from around the world. Pakistan have essentially been locked out of the IPL for about 10 years now. Do you see the PSL over three seasons having bridged that gap somewhat with respect to these things?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's gonna take time. It's only three seasons old, but you know, it's like we attach sometimes like a great importance to what selectors do, especially in Pakistan. And you know, in Pakistan, Hasan, having worked with them now, he will see they are greatly influenced by what they see on TV. You know, a lot of the work. There are a few selectors who go out and you know, and scour domestically, and they go to these private academies and they go to these state ball tournaments. There are guys who do that. There are guys who have done that in the past. But a lot of selection, I think it comes down to what you see on TV. And, you know, the PSL is such a visual spectacle, which is something that Pakistan has been lacking. It's their first domestic tournament that people tune into, that people watch. And selectors are influenced by these kind of things. And so somebody like, you know, like we were saying earlier, Shadab Khan, he has the talent. Even Fahim Ashraf, I would say, someone like him, their talent would have seen them through in Pakistan. Because, you know, for 50 years, the domestic circuit has eventually pushed forward talents in Pakistan, no matter how hidden they may be. You know, a lot of guys have come before these guys who have been found somehow. The scouting network is actually pretty robust, informal, but fairly robust in Pakistan, and they do come through. But the PSL accelerates that, but it also keeps them visible. So, like, you know, if 10 years ago, if a guy had come up and then failed internationally, he might go back into obscurity for a while and not be seen again. But if somebody fails now, they still have the PSL, which is literally almost, it becomes like an audition for the national team. You still have the PSL every year to look forward to. You perform there, selectors watch you. They say, ah, this guy's playing with McCullum, he's doing well with McCullum, he's batting well against Narayan, he's batting well against, you know, Timal Mills or whatever. He must have something. So we keep seeing this, and I think, you know, the visibility of the PSL, which, like the IPL, you know, it keeps players of talent in that public eye. And so that, you know, you kind of get a better chance, I think, of making a career out of your career than you would have done if you didn't have something like the PSL there before. So guys like, you know, Shadab and Fakhar Zaman and Hasan Ali, a lot of guys, you know, there's a number of guys in the IPL, in the PSL, who are kind of on the fringes. And they'll get picked up because of their PSL performances. And it's because, like I said, because selectors, they also watch TV like the rest of us. And they see a lot of these players on TV, and they get influenced by that. So I think, you know, in that way, it's made a very, very tangible difference to the makeup of the Pakistan side.
Hasan, you work closely within the PSL. There is, of course, with T20, a lot of data analytics and tactics and strategy that has come into the game over the past 6-7 years, say maybe slightly longer. How has that changed in Pakistan cricket? Because you've had senior Pakistan cricketers in the past come out and say that, talk about how they've not really given too much importance to coaching. They go and do their thing. The video analysis man is just a sideshow, blah, blah, blah. All of that stuff has happened over the years. Has that mindset changed, and do the young guys take to these things far better than their predecessors?
I think it's starting to change, and it's coming from these young guys. Regarding the mentality, and we're talking about the experts, I remember the first year, the first PSL, Rehan and I were the ones who essentially selected the team. So after, I think the first, we lost the first two games, and one of the selectors, you know, the national selector at the time, came to us and basically said that it's very easy to criticize from the outside, and now we'll see how we perform, you know, when you are selecting the team. So we ended up winning that year, and for some reason I didn't meet him afterwards. But after that, considering that we've done it for like 2 out of 3 years, Quetta have been gone up twice, and they've got Nabil Hashmi, who does a similar sort of job. So there's starting to be a groundswell for the data analytics and stuff like that. But I still think there's like, especially within the experts, there's still this belief that no non-cricketer can tell me about cricket more than what I already know. But once you look at the young guys, I mean, you mentioned this, the new generation coming up, their relationship to numbers, their relationship to technology is very different than what their predecessors were. If you look at somebody like a Hasan Ali, a Sharad Khan, a Fahim Ashraf, all of these guys are under 25. These are guys who've grown up in the age of Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat. This is what they spent their teenage doing. And if they weren't cricketers, they would be like, you know, in their hometowns, on their phones, posting Facebook memes and stuff like that. So their relationship to technology is so different that helps you sort of like develop these guys in terms of like data and numbers and stuff like that. Like, I'll give you an example. In this year's PSL, halfway through the tournament, Shadab was struggling with like an elbow injury and with his form. In a normal, like, 5 years ago, if he was a Pakistan cricketer, what he would have done is he would have taken his coach to the match, he would have started bowling, and he would have asked him, what is he doing wrong, right?
Yeah.
This time around, what he did was he sat with our analyst, he had a split screen where he had his action from PSL 2 and his action from PSL 2, and he went through it over the course of half an hour, seeing what change there had been in his bowling action because he was trying to protect his injury. So whether his front elbow was too high, whether his arm position wasn't right, and by looking at those screens, he could see what he needed to change, and he did that, and he had a very good second half of the season. That is not something that I would ever expect any Pakistan cricketer about the age of 30 to even think of, let alone, you know, act upon it.
Usman, another aspect, I'll be honest, for somebody watching from the outside, it's been a huge surprise. I acknowledge that there were some slip-ups in the Asia Cup, but what's happened to Pakistan's fielding? It seems like the fielding lifts them when things are going against them and the tide is turning against them, even in a T20 game. I'm thinking Fakhar Zaman's run out in the recent game. Yeah. And in general, the standard of fielding seems to have improved quite a lot. It seems like a drastic change from what we've known in the last few years.
Well, it's just 2 years. I mean, I can still remember starkly how bad they were in 2016 at the World T20. They were awful. You know, they were awful, awful. And I remember Jared wrote a fantastic piece about, I think it was a game against New Zealand or maybe Australia and Mohali, where, you know, they had Mohammad Irfan fielding at point. And it was just like, you know, the things are wrong. Like, when you have Mohammad Irfan fielding at point, like, you know, you can't say that we're taking advantage of his height and stuff. You're not. You just don't have, like, any, you know, you have so many players to hide that you've got to start putting them in, like, important positions. So, like, from there to, like, watching this, especially this last, like, post-Asia Cup, the last two T20 series that they've had against Australia and New Zealand, it's been two different teams. And I would never have thought that I would see a day where Pakistan would outfield an Australian side over the course of the series, which they did. I think comprehensively they outfielded Australia in the three T20s. I think, again, the change, you know, we keep going on about it, the PSL has made a difference. There's no doubt about that. I think the standards in the PSL with, again, foreign players, foreign coaches, you learn, pick up different things. Then you have somebody like, again, Shadab, who's a freak. You know, he was, I think, and Hassan will probably clarify this, but I think he's been a naturally athletic and fantastic fielder from the age of, you know, whatever, 7, 8, 9, 11 onwards, because, you know, he was playing on these rough outfields in Pindi and stuff. So you have this, a couple of naturally athletic guys, you have some good coaches who've come in. And then, of course, I think in the national team, you had Steve Rickson, who, you know, he left on bad terms with Pakistan, said some very unkind things about the Pakistan cricket board, unkind, but maybe true also. But I think he was the kind of taskmaster that Pakistan don't often have, but they do respond to. I think he was literally a no-let-up kind of, you know, no-compromise guy who just made you work. And
yeah, I remember
he
did recently say that you had to drill it into their heads every game, otherwise 2 games later they'll just forget what
exactly.
You said.
Yeah. And I think they need that. And I think, you know, and again, we'll probably get into it, but if you see the kind of dip in their performances from the T20 to the ODI side sometimes, even though the personnel is, you know, pretty much the same. I think it is a question of, you know, somebody has to be there literally, just like being in their faces all the time and just getting them to work hard. I think, you know, Mickey Arthur and Rickson, these guys have made a difference. And it's unrecognizable. I think they're on a run, by the way, right now. I was checking with some stats with Mazhar Arshad, who, you know, is king of all stats outside of us, essentially. But he was saying that the run that they're on now, in which they had about 9 runouts in 5 T20s, I think it was 9 in 5 or 6, was basically equaling their best run ever. And I was of the opinion that they would not have had a run like that ever before, because they've never been this good at fielding. But, you know, they're there. And, you know, Fakhar's run out was just one of three. It was as phenomenal as it was, but I think it was one of three direct hits that he affected in the T20s, which is, again, you know, still pretty, like, new for Pakistan to be dealing with something like this.
Hassan, your thoughts on how, I mean, it is largely the PSL, but it's generally the network of coaches who have drilled this into their heads, isn't it?
I think it's like, it's a lot of factors. So like a Jenga tower, we take one piece out and it will probably crash down. It has to do with how much Yatha stretches on fielding and how often he basically, like, you know, take guys out, doesn't favor those guys who are in good fielders, so that creates a culture within the domestic game where you have to be a good fielder to be eligible for the national team. Mm. It has to do with Stamper, Steve Rickson, like, you talk to all of these guys, the players in the team, and like, they all talk about the same two things, which is that A, he was a very hard taskmaster, and B, that his approval was something that betrayed. Mm. Now, you could go into the whole psychology of it, but you won't go there. But that's another factor. Then there's the fact that you look at somebody like the year we were, I'll just give you an example, the year we were taking Shadab, and three teams had six picks, pick emerging guys, which is under 23 guys before us, and none of those six picks were Shahrad, even though on our draft board, he was the number one emerging player. So I sort of got concerned at the time that maybe there's something wrong, maybe there's a, an Ahmed Shahrad emotional hiding somewhere, which is why everyone's passing on passing on him. So I was talking to Mesba, and I asked him if this kid is okay, because he'd already captained him in a domestic tournament before, and he was like, I don't care if his bowling translates to the higher level, I don't care if his batting translates to the higher level, I play him because he'll save me 10 to 15 runs in every match. And that then becomes like, if you are going to select a guy, if it comes down to those sort of margins, all teams would prefer better fielding guys. So the guys who are better fielders then get an advantage into getting into those teams. So then it sort of becomes a snowball in that case. Plus, there's the fact that this generation, like, you haven't got like 10 great fielders. You've got like 5 or 6. Malik's always been a great fielder. Shahrab is a really good fielder, but like, he was fielded by Pakistan standards. Fakhar is a really good fielder, and he's really set, but that has a lot to do with his military background. So like, in every single situation, Babar is a really good fielder. He comes from Lahore club team, which tends to have better fielders in a lot of other places. So like, every single situation is rather unique, but because Mickey Arthur and Steve Richardson combined all those things, you suddenly had like 5 or 6 good fielders in the team. And because you had that, then you could hide the mediocre fielders. You would have, like, you can have Hashim Ali and Shoaib Malik at long on and long off. You can have Shahrukh Khan at deep mid wicket. And you can hide, say, Shaheen Afridi at 45. And the team looks really good. But if instead you've got like 6 bad fielders, then you keep trying to hide those guys. And that is when teams are exposed. In part, was really exposed was because Usman was talking about the 2016 World T20. And in that team, you had Shahid Afridi, who couldn't really run anymore. You had Mohammad Irfan, who doesn't really run, or rather can't really run. Yeah. You have Shazeel Khan, who actually doesn't really run. And like, you had like 4 or 5 of these guys.
Yeah, that's 4 or 5 regions like, which a good batsman will exploit. Yeah.
I think even you mentioned, Hassan, you mentioned like Shaheen Afridi, you have to like kind of hide him. But even he, like if you look at him, his performances in this series at least, he's kind of showing that he can be, like they've obviously worked with him and they've obviously worked very hard with him on his fielding. And he's actually like, he's pulled off some great saves standing at like short fine leg or short third. And you can kind of see that. I think did he effect a direct hit at some point in this? Or was that, I think that might have been Usman Shinwari who did the direct hit run out. But even somebody like Shaheen Afridi, in a different team 2 years ago, you really would have had to hide him. Whereas in this side, I feel like, okay, you have to maybe hide him, but you can still rely on him to do the basics fairly well, I think, and fairly athletically as well.
Hassan, Usman spoke about this in brief. I think we'll touch upon it in a little broader detail. You did speak about scouting and coaching at the PSL. No country's national coach, to my immediate memory, also coaches in their domestic T20 league. We've spoken about there's obviously focus on Mickey's potential conflict of interest with coaching Karachi Kings and also coaching Pakistan at the same time. But how much has the talent pipeline and in general selection benefited from his involvement in the PSL as a full-time coach?
I think regarding the conflict of interest, I mean, that's always going to be there. Like every time you see a guy move from another five side, want to move to Karachi, then suddenly you have all these conspiracy theories popping up. The thing that helps having him with the Karachi Kings, with him during the whole of the PSL, planning against the guys that he might eventually have in his team, so that he can sort of go through them in far more detail. You look at somebody like Usman Shinwari. He was out of the national team for like 2-3 years, went through, I think, 2 operations of his back. And then he was picked up by Karachi Kings, by Raj Latif. I think he's their mentor or director of cricket, essentially. So he picked him up, and Shinwari played with Mickey Arthur and Azhar Mahmood, who was both part of the Karachi Kings dugout. So they saw him, he performed really well. So like 6 months later when he was brought into the national team, they knew exactly the person that they were dealing with, what his strengths were, what his weaknesses were, what sort of mentality that he had. So that his transition from like outside of the team to into the team was like much smoother than it would have been, say, 3-4 years ago. So I'm pretty sure that is something that helps. And at the same time, if you look at somebody like Babar Azam, he's really developed his stroke play over the past couple of years, again, with Karachi, because he has Mickey with him there. Mickey knows that this is something that he needs to work on, so he can actually have him work on that in the PSL. At the same time, Babar starting to open in T20 cricket before he did it for the national team, he started doing that for Karachi because that was something that Mickey wanted to experiment with. So, like, it's obvious that there are ways that it really helps national team, but if it's ethical or not, that's a completely separate debate.
Yeah, that sort of thing definitely helps the national setup, especially in terms of communication and being aware of talent, etc. Osman, this is obviously not the first time Pakistan have been on this kind of a T20 run. It did happen, and there have been comparisons made with the side that went on to win the World T20 in 2009. Who do you think will win a showdown between these two? And just as importantly, which team does Shahid Afridi play for?
Oh, man, I'm not prepared to answer this question. These are tough ones. I don't know. Those guys are proven champions, you know. But I would look at that team now. I mean, they're going to play now, right? They're going to play in 2018. So I would go with this side over that. Maybe I would have somebody like a peak era Umar Gul in the side. Afridi, I would just have because he's Afridi, and you know everyone has a soft spot. So I would have Peak Afridi in the side as well. Who else would I? I'm trying to think of whether I would
Shoaib Malik again, guy who's straddled both eras.
I don't know who else. Who would we get from the 2007 to 2009 T20 sides other than Afridi and Gul maybe into this team? I'm trying to think of others who we had.
I would say to still lacking even with Hussain and Sharaf and all these guys. They haven't really translated that to the national level, and with Razak, that is something that you know he's an expert at.
Yeah, it's quite interesting in terms of the sheer personal changes. Umar Gul, of course, went on to become, I mean, he still remains one of the greatest T20 bowlers of all time in terms of just his sheer stats and his impact in that tournament overall. So, broadly, Osman, do you think in 2018, this lot is much better prepared to the modern T20 game as it is in terms of, you know, as an overall package?
Yeah, I think so. Like, you know, in terms of being prepared for a format and knowing their role in a format and knowing what to do. They're just better organized. They're definitely a better fielding side. I would think that, you know, if you put them up, okay, I'll guess I'll say it. If you put them up in a series of 5 matches, I would expect this side to win that series. Not 5-0, but I would expect them to win the series, you know, maybe 3-1 with one tied on a super over or something like that, because it's two Pakistan sides and who knows what can go wrong, how many things can go wrong when you've got two of them playing. I mean, 7 of them will be banned from the end of that season or whatever. But I would take this side. I would have more confidence in this side winning the series than that side. Because that 2009 side was actually like, the whole way they won the tournament was once the typical Pakistan one. They were like a shambles and there were players getting injured and players missing and nobody was happy with the captain. The captain wasn't even really a T20 player. They lost and then the Sunday turned it around, you know, on the back of Afridi's kind of inspiration and stuff. So I would still go with this, and I can't believe I'm saying it, but I would go with the more organized, more settled Pakistan side of 2018 over the mercurial, typical, stereotypical Pakistan side of 2009.
Hassan, where is your heart lie in terms of the more structured, organized?
It has to be with the numbers. Don't disappoint.
Well, as a fan, I prefer that you had 9 lot, but like we sort of, you know, contributed to this generation, so I'm very biased towards these guys. The way sort of like they've developed and the way sort of like we try to, you know, the 10 years Pakistan being left behind by the T20 revolution, tried to, you know, minimize that gap the way these guys have developed over the past couple of years. I mean, I'm always going to be biased towards these guys.
Hmm. Yeah, fair enough. Pretty good side and very consistent side by Pakistan standards over those two and a half years between World Cup 2020, 2007 and 2009, when they had a very similar run in terms of dominance and how good their bowling was.
Is Malik the only guy who's in both eras? I think he is, right?
Should be. Yeah.
Hafiz played, I think, some part of them, but I think Malik's the only consistent guy.
Hafiz and Malik have always been there. They're like, you know, Jack Nicholson in the final.
Yeah, it's quite a long time in terms of, you know, just in general a career and a T20 career itself. Hafiz, did Malik also play World T20 2007? Should have, I think.
Yeah, he was captain.
So, it's 11, 12 years is quite a long time. We'll conclude this episode with the section we call the standoff. It's been a while since we did this, when Jared Kimber and Gaurav Sundararaman spoke about an all-time great from the past who would have been a big hit in T20 cricket. Sid Barnes and Waseem Akram were the two guys they picked. We'll just modify it for Hassan and Osman and ask them which Pakistani former cricketer needn't necessarily be an all-time great, would have been a hit, big hit in T20 cricket. I mean, let's assume we had the PSL back in his time and see which person both of them pick. Osman, let's start with you.
I'm glad you clarified that it doesn't have to be an all-time great that we have to pick, because
I could have been an all-time great.
The Sahiwal Express, as he was known in his heyday. Mandur Elahi, for those of our listeners who, and there's many who would not have ever heard of him, was one of the first wave of like post-Imran type replacements. Not replacements, but he was the guy who was supposed to like kind of succeed Imran at that time. He's an all-rounder, swashbuckling kind of hard-hitting, had a similar action to Imran as a bowler, except he was shorter and didn't jump as high in his run-up and stuff. But he was the kind of guy who would come in who would be good for like, you know, he could bat. If he batted 10, 15 balls, he would get you some useful runs. And if he bowled just four overs, they would be a small enough sample for him to not be hit. And, you know, he would pick up some wickets. He had a good Yorker even back then. He never quite made it to the Pakistan side, like, in a major way. I mean, you know, he played for Pakistan. He had a couple of performances as well. And his brothers did better for Pakistan, Saleem Elahi and all, than he ever did. But I think if he had been born in the T20 era and the PSL era, then he would have been part of this 2018 side for sure.
And who knows, he could have become a prime minister as well in the future. So
ultimately, yes, give him another 10 years from this 2018 side.
Yeah, Hassan, who are you going for? Are you going for a proper all-time great, or is it a left field pick like Osman's?
Well, the easy, obvious, and the correct answer would be Imran. But I'm instead going to go with two names, and I'll throw them out to you and Osman, and you can pick whichever one it is. The first name is, so basically, if you consider 1980 to be the peak of all-rounders, 90 to be for the fast bowlers, and 2000 to be for spinners and batsmen, then the numbers really make sense. In the whole decade of the 1990s, there were only three batsmen who had an average over 40 and a strike rate over 80 in ODI cricket. One was Sachin Tendulkar, obviously. One was Lance Klusener, who had a lot of knockouts and a relatively smaller sample size in the great 98-99. And the third name wasn't Saurav Ganguly, wasn't Prime Dye, it was Syed Anwar.
Wow.
Syed Anwar, at that time, in power plays, used to bat at over 6 and over. And he bring him to this era, and he would have loved it. A. And B, nowadays, a lot of these power play bangers, what you try to do is you bowl left-arm spin against them, you bowl somebody like a Mujeeb Zebran against them because they don't like facing the spinners. And Syed Anwar was probably a better player of spin than he was of fast bowling. So that's the first name. The second name is basically, if you look at T20 cricket, the most valuable player is a leg spinner who can hit big, preferably a left-hander, and he's unafraid of anything, including losing his wicket. So for that, I would go with Waseem Raja, who could hit something like 550 in a series against the West Indies in the 1970s. He could take 5,000 test cricket with his next in bowling. Mm. And he was, the whole thing with him was he was a bit mercurial, and I thought I think if he was born in the T20 era, he would have been a global superstar.
Which West Indies fast bowler did he hit for six, you said, in the 1975 World Cup? He did, right?
I remember in the 1975, I was watching one of the games, fast on West Indies, 1975, and he charged Andy Roberts without a helmet. So that's the thing he used to do.
Yeah, both could have been big hits by the looks of it. Saeed Anwar is somebody who a lot of us are from eras past familiar in terms of, I mean, and he's hit India the hardest over time with the 194 and the 100 in the World Cup, which, yeah. So, Saeed Anwar is a name that springs to mind. Waseem Raja is obviously a lot more left field who listeners might not have heard of. So, two players who, I mean, one less heard of, two less heard of players out of three who would have been big hits in T20 cricket from Osman and Hassan. So that brings us to the end of yet another episode of Talking T20. Thank you, listener, for joining us once again, and look forward to your company soon. And remember, you can now subscribe to Talking T20 on iTunes, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And if you did like this episode, please leave us a rating on iTunes. It helps more people find our podcast. Thanks once again.